Show on Beat, where I interview reporters from all over the NFL, and today is a little bit of a exciting episode, at least for me as a Giants fan. I have beat writer Zach Rosenblatt. He also is a University of Arizona alum, which is so cool because this is a double whammy. I never get this excited as much as I love interviewing everyone. I am very excited to have a fellow alum here, and especially some of our Giant, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. You know, just trying to survive these insane times.
Yeah, right. I mean, the season's almost over, kind of.
It is. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Football is a nice distraction from all the problems of the world. You know.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying for weeks. It's so nice. It's like the one thing where you could just focus on and not worry about the
football. I mean, when there's not football, I mean, I sit around my ass anyway, but I'm sitting.
Yeah, me too. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have another appearance. I'm like, what else am I going to do? It's Saturday night. I'm not going anywhere. So it's fine.
It is crazy that it's week 17 already and that the Giants are in the playoffs. Playoff
hunt. Yeah, crazy. Yeah. I can't. Almost. We'll see. I don't know, though. I don't know about that. But why don't you let everyone know where they can find you before we get started?
Yeah, I'm right for NJ.com and the New York Star Ledger. That's where you can find my work, NJ.com/Giants. And I'm on Twitter at Zach Blatt, Zack.
Yeah, and Zach is an awesome follow, especially if you're a Giants fan. I kind of just fell into this Giants community. Giants Nation can be very tough, as I'm sure Zach can tell you. They are some brutal fans, but he does a fantastic job. All of his work, I read all of his articles every week.
Thank you.
He is one of my favorite beat writers, especially covering the Giants. So definitely give him a follow if you have not already. And then you can follow me at Steffi Smalls with 3 L's. The show's handle is at OnBeat19. And then you can also follow Sleeper Wire. When did you start with the Giants? Because you were an Eagles beat writer?
Yeah, I covered the Eagles for 2 years. And then I started on, I covered a game for the Giants at the end of last season when we lost a reporter who had like a kid or whatever. Okay. So I filled in for the Bears game in Chicago. And then I wrote a story about Dave Gettleman towards the end of last year where I like went to his, or the school where he was a gym teacher of the football coach or whatever, like way back when. It was in like Spack and Kill. Oh, it was in Poughkeepsie, New York. And I drove all the way out there and I got some funny photos of him and wrote like in the background and stuff. And he was a driver's ed teacher. That's what it was. Cause I thought
I definitely have to check that out. I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah, I'm sure I will.
Pretty great. I'll send you a link to it.
Yeah, you have to definitely send it to me.
Yeah, and then I officially started on the beat probably around like the scouting combine, I would say.
Yeah.
Back when everybody was allowed to be around people, that was like the last.
Yeah, right. When we were allowed to even be in the same room with more than one other person without a mask on.
My first year on the Giants beat was the craziest year.
That's so crazy. So did you cover the Eagles? You covered the Eagles before, though. So it's not that football is
I covered the NFL, but my first on the Giants was small remote. So.
Wow. What an experience. That's actually crazy. And it must be different. I can't even imagine. You don't get like that in-person contact.
Yeah. I miss being able to, I mean, I don't know if it'll ever look the same now, but going into locker rooms and getting to know guys that way. Now it's all via Zoom. And I mean, I do a lot of my work away from the building anyway, making phone calls and stuff like that. But you definitely miss like the personal part of it because it's all doing it via Zoom is just not the same thing.
Yeah. Definitely. I know. Even listening because I watch all the presses.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, the press conferences are the same way. Yeah.
You could tell, like, it's just a little bit different. It's a little weird. They're like, okay, next question.
It's an order, and you might not get a question in. And all that.
Yeah, it's so funny. What was your major at U of A? When did you graduate?
I graduated in 2013.
Okay, so I graduated in 2015. So we actually were there at the same time.
We crossed over there. Yeah.
Very nice. And then ever since then, University of Arizona has just been absolute trash.
Fire since I left. I left at the end of 2017, which I think was the last time they were in a bowl game, maybe.
So, yeah. Yeah. We got some good basketball, though, at least.
Did you see they just did a self-imposed tournament ban, so they're not even going to be playing in March this year, so.
Okay. These are work on the athletics there. once I make any money, I'll maybe start donating so they can start figuring it out over there because it's a mess. At least they fired the football coach. It's a disaster over there. Oh my gosh. It's so bad. Speaking of coaches, actually, I just wrote keywords. It's usually what I do when I am doing this. And the first thing on here, when we talk about coaches, who do you think I'm going to ask? No, Jason Garrett.
No,
I want to go right. I want to go right for it. Do you think what's like the vibe of him when you're doing press? He doesn't do press a lot, I noticed. Right.
So the offensive, defensive, and special teams coordinator do once a week usually, but he's been dealing with the COVID thing, so we didn't have him for weeks. We get him probably for the last time this season on Thursday, I would guess, or Friday or whatever. But yeah, ask your questions. I'm sure I can.
You're like, let me not put an opinion right away. Do you think he'll be here next year?
Do I think he'll be here next? I've been asked that a lot. I think I'm like 50-50 on it. There's no question the offense has been a problem. The fact that the Jets are pretty much the only worst offense in terms of like production, passing and scoring. And Daniel Jones hasn't progressed in the way that they like. If you just look. Mm-hmm. Purely as a progress in the way they wanted him to, and that's why he's here. So I think the fact that he fired Colombo, who's a close friend of Jason Garrett, I know the situation was unique. Like that shows that Joe's not afraid to fire someone who doesn't really have connections to him. So I think there's a lot of like wind blowing in that direction. I haven't heard anything, but I would not be surprised at all if he was fired.
Right, it wouldn't be shocking to me. I kind of think it's going to come down to this last game a little bit. I think especially watching the first Dallas game, I mean, this has been Jason Garrett's problem with the offense the whole time. Is he like comes out super hot sometimes. I will say sometimes. I'm not going to say all the time. I'm not going to give him that. But especially that Cowboys game, we're like, oh, he just needed a revenge game. He's fine. He first quarter, second quarter, he's calling awesome plays. This is great. And then he went back to Jason Garrett in the end. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this weekend goes. But it's crazy watching this offense. I didn't think it could get any worse, and somehow it has managed to – it's almost non-existent, which is really it comes down to they're going to need to really use this offseason to take some draft picks and figure out what they're going to do, because you can't really evaluate a quarterback without him even having people to throw to. I mean, last week was really obvious that there's a problem there. They basically only have wide receiver two, wide receiver three. I don't know that I would call Slayton a wide receiver three even. It'll be interesting. I think this week will be a big determiner with how they move forward with him at least.
Yeah, I think a lot of it and that kind of goes to what you're talking about. A lot of it is how they evaluate Jason. I guess they have to decide if they felt like they had good enough talent for him to do what he wanted to do anyway. Like if they, maybe this is on Dave Gettleman. I've written that a few times. There's part to blame. I think the circumstances, I could see a scenario where they use the circumstances as an excuse for not making wholesale changes. Like, we didn't have a full off season with him, blah, 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 blah. Like, I can see all that stuff. But at the same time, like, this is the same, everybody hyped up this wide receiver tight end group and Saquon. Of course, they lost Saquon. They built the whole offense around him, but you have to have a backup plan. And all the receivers are the same as last year, and they've all been healthy pretty much the whole year. And the passing offense has never been worse. And Evan Engram drops a lot, but I don't know if Jason Garrett's done a good job of scheming him open. And
that's the point.
It's like all comes together, and somebody's going to have to take the blame for it. And Jason Garrett makes the most sense, that's for sure.
Yeah, it makes. And it's funny that you said Evan Engram, because that's kind of been my point with him all along, as frustrating as it is. And as much as I tweet about him and trash him again, I don't know why this is false. As much as I on Twitter am not kind about Mr. Engram, I also think that Jason Garrett is like, he thinks that he's still in Dallas. He's coaching him like Jason Witten.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's hard to tell. I mean, the one thing that has improved with Engram is that yes, his blocking's gotten better, but he can't be the highest targeted player on the team if he's going to keep dropping the balls. And for a while, I mean, I'm sure you noticed it was the first half of the season was just Engram reverse, and it just didn't work. It just wasn't fitting. So I'm wondering if Jason Garrett just doesn't fit this scheme. I almost think he would be a better college football coach. I wouldn't be surprised if he was seen on a college football team next year, because he really –
Yeah. I mean, I was just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if he got interviews to be an NFL head coach again. That's just kind of how it works in the NFL. They cycle through the same guys constantly. He was a coach for 9 years, had relative success. I mean, they were never terrible. They were always average pretty much, but they were never terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I could totally see some owner who doesn't really pay that much attention talking themselves into Jason Garrett.
Right.
Which I'm sure Giants fans, I know the joke that when the Giants were on that winning streak, the joke was like, no, you guys don't want Patrick Graham. You want to hire Jason Garrett. He's done a great job.
Yeah, exactly. Leave Patrick Graham alone and take Jason Garrett, please. Yeah, I actually, yeah. Funny, because you're a U of A alum. I tweeted at ASU, you guys should check out Jason Garrett and Gaze. I heard that they were great for your future. I got no replies, but I at least made myself laugh. But there's a lot of talk with Patrick Graham. People think he's going to take a head coaching. I don't really see that happening. I don't know what vibe you get from him. When I watch press with him, it seems like he's kind of bought into the system, and that I could see him at least staying another year to see his success play out. But then also you see this last, it's like weeks, like last week, the defense really didn't play that well either. So I don't know how you feel about him moving forward.
I don't know if it's his time yet necessarily. I'm very impressed by him. I think he's going to be a head coach one day. Everybody raved just about how smart the guy is. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem over the last few weeks is more an indictment on Gettleman and the like talent on that defense. Like, they have some such obvious holes that he's done a great job of like scheming around. Mm-hmm. That second cornerback spot, the pass rusher, the linebackers next to Blake Martinez. And even those defensive linemen, they've been good, but those guys aren't generally great pass rushers. They're all good at stopping the run usually.
No.
So I think he's done the best he possibly can with what he has. I think teams around the NFL are probably going to want to see more of that next year, I would think. I wouldn't be surprised if he got an interview or two this offseason, but probably a little too early for him, I would say. But yeah, I'm very intrigued and encouraged by like the job he did this year. And even in press conferences, he just carries himself in a way that like, I didn't cover them when he was the defensive line coach here. Mm-hmm. Everybody talked about him like he wasn't like a big talker back then. Mm-hmm. Now he'll answer any question, he'll have long answers. He has a personality, and I think he probably wants to be a head coach, I would guess. So I could see that happening down the line.
It's interesting I love that hire. I know there's like a little bit of chatter when he did get hired, but I think it's that old school mentality that Joe Judge has. And I think that they complement each other very well. So I think that that's where a lot of that success has been. It's just really figuring out this offense. And you look at a team like the Browns, I think it's just going to coach it and some really solid draft picks. There can be one slip up. It has to be something that's taken very seriously. And it's really frustrating as a fan myself to watch, because there's some holes that need to be filled, but without them filled, it's a nightmare. I mean, the last couple of weeks have been very frustrating to watch, especially coming off of a four-game winning streak. I don't know when you're interviewing players, can you tell that they're frustrated? I could tell that Shepherd was frustrated this past week or the week before too. Yeah. I don't know.
The week before, for sure, you could sense him and Logan Ryan in general lately has kind of pushed back at like us asking questions that were critical, which, you know, whatever. I mean, they haven't played well, so we asked the questions about it, like, whatever. But I like Logan Ryan, by the way. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think you could tell these last couple of games in particular. I mean, two weeks ago was a tough one because the offense just kept putting the defense in bad field position, and special teams was struggling and putting them in bad field position, and they weren't really in a position to succeed. And they also didn't have James Bradbury that day and Darnay Holmes. So like there's just a lot stacked against them. I think, you know, just the combination of all those things happened, they've had so many close losses. They're right there. They probably still, I mean, they definitely shouldn't be in the playoff race still, but they are. So they did a good job of hiding any frustration they had when they were 1-7 as the season's gone on, and they had that like taste of success. I think they, you know, if they lost this week, I'm curious to see how they handle it post game.
Yeah, I could imagine that being extremely frustrating, especially I think something that the Giants, I applaud them, and especially being a fan and watching them my whole life growing up, that there was always this culture that was there. And I think that they do a really good job with the media. I think that they never really throw anyone under the bus. Joe Judge has done a really good job kind of instilling that in them, where you can tell when the question gets asked, what happened there on that play? I'm not really sure. I'd have to look over the film. It's a team sport. Yeah. You know, it's the same kind of thing over and over again. And it reminds me of Brandon Jacobs and all those guys when they used to play back in the day. So I think that that culture is returning, because there was a while where I totally forgot that that was even a thing there. Because the way that they deal with the media, I think, is I applaud them at least for that. I don't know if you, like, compared to interviewing other teams. Because when I watch interviews, it just seems like there's something about the culture there that's very obviously changed. And I think a lot of that actually has to do with Logan Ryan. I think he has done, I was so excited to see that they signed him. I was very worried that they weren't going to do that. I think his worth, it's okay, he's a little bit older of a player, but the worth alone of having that leadership there is huge, because you can see it. It's obviously spreading through the locker room.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of guys, you know, I think they're maybe they stay on the message that Joe Judge has, and that's pretty obvious in every press conference. Logan Ryan's a guy that kind of has the, you know, cachet to kind of say what he wants almost. And he's more honest and open than any of the players on the team. And that's probably because he has that past relation with Joe. He knows what they expect. Logan, you know, you talked about, you know, his leadership, but even like in terms of the structure, the scheme and all that stuff, like he's been a really important part of what Patrick Graham is able to do. Mm-hmm. He teaches these young guys.
Awesome.
He hasn't had his best games the last couple weeks, I would say. He's been generally good for most of the season, but his value is almost more important behind the scenes than it is
on the field. Especially, yeah.
I mean, like, you're talking about, like, the whole messaging and all that stuff. Like, he knows what Joe Judge wants, which is why, you know, it's funny. They wouldn't have signed him if McKinney didn't get hurt. And now he's like their most important player.
But what's awesome is that now it's so ironic, because now Logan is going to be a huge mentor for McKinney moving forward.
Going into next year, yeah.
So I even thought, I mean, I was pumped for how long that contract was that they just re-signed him. I honestly thought we'd only get another year out of him or something. But people forget how important it is to have vets on the team. And I think it's also a lot of Giants fans forget that this team is very young. They're the youngest in the NFL. This is a young team. A lot of these guys are, I mean, look at the O-line. It's essentially all rookies. So to be able to instill that culture is a huge thing. So to have vets like Logan Ryan, and I mean, it's hard. These guys are so young, but for the Giants, Blake Martinez is essentially a vet. He just played on another team. So
maybe 26 or whatever.
Yeah, so, but that's not the norm for other teams. But for this team, Shep is a vet at this point. So even Jabril Peppers, all those guys, I think you can notice they definitely have that obvious teamwork that no one ever points a finger at each other, which I got nervous when Shep started getting angry during that one press conference. I'm like, this is about to go the wrong way. No.
He was defensive more about like the crit, like, obviously, and I'm sure, I know you've tweeted about it, obviously, and I'm sure you've talked about it. Just everybody's been critical of those receivers and how they're not getting open and all that stuff. And I think he took it personally. A lot of times these NFL players, and when like those analytical stats where they really get in the weeds, and that's how people start criticizing them. And I think they take it personally, like, well, we're out there playing football. You guys are on computers or whatever. Like, I get it. But like, I mean, the numbers say they're not getting open. So that's why.
And I appreciate that too, especially being someone, because obviously I didn't play football. I just am a football fan, and it was always part of my life. So for me, I try to stay away from the numbers, just because I think that you can also watch the game and take it in an objective way versus.
You can make numbers say whatever you want them to, really. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And even I know with even this past week, Parrott is someone I'm sure you've seen. I'm very high on the Parrott train. And I was obviously, it's very disappointing to see him let three sacks, but you have to look at the rest of the season. So those numbers can say whatever they want. He still has half the amount of sacks allowed compared to everyone else. I know he hasn't played that much, but it's hard because the fans get so stuck on these numbers. And I'm sure that with the players, it's just as frustrating, especially when you're working your butt off. Cause you know, Shep, he loves being a Giant. I can see that in all of his mic'd up. The fans just get really caught up in these stats. It's the stats. It's the same thing with Daniel Jones. They see the amount of interceptions, but they can't just watch the film from last week because he played a really good game. If those balls were caught, that was his, in my opinion, his best game this entire season. He played a good game. He was moving well. I didn't think it was going to go that well. So it's hard. I don't know how you deal with it, because I see fans all the time going at you, and you deal with it very well, though. Very, very well. I applaud you, because I got
trained in Philadelphia. They get angry over there too. So.
Yeah, it's true.
They still get mad at me anytime I like make a joke about the Eagles, but so everybody's mad about them.
People forget you can have your own opinion. It's fine.
Yeah. But I think there are like values in like, especially some of those analytic stats that kind of like confirm what you're like, the separation thing, like that's something we're seeing. And then you look at the numbers and it's true, or,
right,
you know, whether it's fair, like the eye test shows that Andrew Thomas has played better with Shane Lemieux than Will Hernandez, whether it's because he's playing with Shane Lemieux or Will Hernandez, like who knows? But like the numbers say that, and you kind of like get that sense that he's played better over the last
year.
So it's like stuff like that. You can also, like you said, you can take the very base stats and overanalyze it, or the opposite. You can underanalyze a stat or whatever. And I just think if you use that as a reference point, it's good. But the eye test ultimately is what you should base it on. Yeah.
Even with Lemieux, like I almost am not as impressed with Lemieux. I know everyone's very high on him right now, but
yeah.
If you look at his numbers in particular, so there's one thing with taking the numbers with a grain of salt. So if the number is this, it might vary a little bit, especially with PFF, whatever. But his PFF score is like 26 or something. Yeah. Like it's crazy compared to a Parrott who is like 75.
Yeah, I think so three linemen, yeah. Parrott.
They're not making – you can't make the range of the number up, but I get where people's frustration is. But someone like Lemieux, I mean, I'm not exactly impressed with him so far. Parrott is someone who obviously when he's on the field, everyone is playing better. I mean, I think Colombo leaving was a big part of it. I can't even imagine the interviews after that happened. It seems like everyone was very, just tried to keep it neutral. The only one that showed a little view.
I imagine they told them not to say anything.
Yeah. It seems like Nick Gates was the only one that showed I saw a little emotion from him. Ingram tried to.
Those guys really liked Mark Colombo is the thing. Like they're all really, he was like a player, former player that they respected.
Yeah.
Like the complete opposite personality. He's like this, you know, happy-go-lucky. I don't know if happy-go-lucky is the right word, but he's a very interesting character. I don't know if you've watched his interviews, but
I haven't seen any of his yet.
I would recommend watching them.
I will have to check it out.
He's the guy in the past that has rubbed players the wrong way, and that's why he's kind of bounced around the league a lot. But
yeah, but it almost fits the scheme better. That's kind of where
coach for the Patriots. So
this is where this idea of scheme comes in, and that's kind of where I see Jason Garrett leaving, because I think Jason Garrett and Colombo were a little bit of a two-man deal. So with him out of there and with the way that everyone's performing, I could just see them wanting to. I know people have hesitations with Daniel, but I mean, I don't know if you probably don't rewatch games, and you definitely don't rewatch them the way I do. So and the amount of times that I do, but even in that last, not the last game, the game before the Browns game, Dale Jones on the sideline didn't even want to speak to Jason Garrett. He came to sit next to him and Daniel turned his head. Like they have no chemistry there. I think Daniel will be fine with an offseason and a new coach. Who cares? It's not like Jason, he's not doing much for him now. So,
I think the whole idea of him, like the whole new offense thing, is a little overblown. Like, if the offense isn't working right now, then you don't just keep doing it. So, like, if they think it's not the right offense, you change it. And hopefully, the next guy you get, you can keep around. Or they go to Freddie Kitchens and he's been around for the scheme now and he can adjust it. So they're throwing the ball deep more or whatever. But I don't think that's going to be a deterrent from them firing Garrett necessarily, even if I've seen a lot of people kind of latch onto that idea.
No, I think, and also I think it's partly, I'm sure that Dale Jones's confidence is also playing some kind of portion into it. You know, when you are getting ridiculed for the amount of turnovers that you have, you can see him when he does his reads. He clearly sees someone like Ingram or Slayton, knows they're going to drop the ball, panics, and then just throws the ball another direction. So you can kind of see it. I don't know if I'm trying to be a believer, because I do think that Daniel Jones.
I will say, I think, you know, Daniel Jones is still like part of the problem as well. Like he's not.
Yeah, I think so too. I just.
Like you said, he's definitely shown signs. I think over the last month, if not for his injury, we might be seeing him play the best football of his career right now, for all we know, because he hasn't turned the ball over. That injury really affected him. He shouldn't have played that Cardinals game. I think that
I was so frustrated.
Anybody with two eyes could see that. But he still has some problems with decisions, and you know, the turnovers cutting down is good, but he still had too many to start the year. I think the coach acknowledged that. So there are definitely things he needs to work on, but yeah, I mean the circumstances around him are not suitable for a quarterback to succeed.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sold he's a franchise quarterback, but I think that you need to at least show us that with a different coordinator in there, and with at least he needs a wide receiver one. There just isn't one on the team. And I know everyone wants to say that there is. There's not. Shep is not wide receiver one. So they're not wide receiver ones, period. And even last week, I mean, you saw them try to use Mac. He's still a rookie and he's dropping the ball. So it's just kind of dysfunction all over the place. I mean, there's so many places that need to be fixed, but it's really the offense that needs the most help. Do you think they'll take a wide receiver in the first round?
Well, it's, I don't know. It kind of depends on where they wind up. If they're 19th, I don't know. So they don't have enough money to go and get like a bunch of big time free agents. So what's going to wind up happening is they need to decide if they want to spend that money on an edge rusher or a wide receiver, and then maybe use the other asset, the first round pick on the other position that you didn't get there. They need a number two corner still. Those are not that easy to find, obviously, because they've shuffled through so many over the years. Those are the three main areas they got to address. I mean, you could say an inside linebacker next to Blake, you know, maybe another. Right. I mean, it depends on what they think of, you know, Lemieux and Hernandez at left guard. Maybe they need another left guard.
I think they need another guard too.
I guess if there's a positive, like they pretty clearly define needs, or it's like three or four things that they fill those things, they're in good shape.
Right.
They're in pretty good shape elsewhere. I mean, they might lose one of those defensive linemen, obviously. I think they like BJ Hill enough to just elevate him to a starter maybe. So I think the clearly defined needs is a good thing, but if they mess up on the guys that they get in the first round, and you know, if they give a big money contract to one of those receivers or whatever it is, and if they mess up, then they're ruining Daniel Jones.
Or if they pay Leo $21 million, which is absolutely insane to me. But I wouldn't be surprised if we actually see Leo Williams not on the team.
They're going to have to choose between him and Dalvin. That's for sure. And everything I've heard is Leonard Williams wants to be paid like one of the best. I mean, his numbers say he's one of the best defensive linemen, so he's going to want to get paid like that. And that's in the 18 to 22 million per year range, which is a lot of money to commit to somebody who had a half a sack last year and he's in a contract year. So, I mean, like there's a lot they have to weigh. I like Leo. I think he's a very talented player, but yeah, I mean, $20 million a year is a lot to commit to somebody for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that with Patrick Graham, I think he could elevate a good player to be great. So my problem with Leo Williams is that, which I think they'll notice too, is you do see these games where he's almost completely absent. And I know he has phenomenal games and I know he's a good player and I don't damper that at all. But I think even the past couple weeks, we haven't really seen anything. He didn't make the Pro Bowl. So I think that they at least will have that advantage.
If they don't bring Leonard Williams back, then they for sure better go and get a good pass rusher because you're losing your best there.
Yeah, for sure.
If they didn't want to use Marcus Golden this year or whatever, Leonard Williams kind of replaced that production. And if you get rid of him, then you better find a guy or two or three that can rush the passer. So.
Right. This O-line, though, is a pain in the butt. I feel like I could see them almost taking another tackle.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't rule that out. I mean, part of it depends on how they feel about Matt Peart. I feel like he can be a long-term starter at right time. I mean, I think that's part of the reason why they wanted to play him the way they have, so they can get him his feet wet as opposed to sitting him out the whole year. I know the coaching staff really pushed to draft him, so they clearly liked him. I think they like him.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, if they're sitting there at five and, you know, Jamar Chase is already picked, you know, maybe Penei Sewell is a guy that they would think about taking.
If he drops, you have to
take then you bookend Andrew Thomas and him, and you're protecting Daniel Jones better than any Giants quarterback's been protected in a long time. So
Right. I worry about Peart that they maybe are, I think, not giving him enough experience that it's going to damper. I think they focus a lot on Andrew Thomas, especially with Colbo, that you saw his snap counts were just bizarre all over the place. I mean, it's clear when he's on the field,
I don't know if problem is the right word, but them competing for the playoffs is probably why they kept Cam Fleming in there for so long. I think the coach staff really likes him. If they had been in another division and been eliminated 4 weeks ago, maybe Pert's already starting, but because they're trying to win right now or whatever. I mean, it kind of was the problem for a few years there where they weren't, you know, they weren't doing the right things during a rebuild. They were trying to win and they weren't winning. So
I've been telling people, don't get excited. I think Cam Fleming is here to stay. The coaching staff staff likes him. It's just like Ingram. They like certain players, and those are two players that that coaching staff likes, and it's obvious. I mean, there's no excuse for why Cam Fleming was staying in games sometimes. I mean, there is literally no excuse. His performances were atrocious in the beginning of the season. I mean, they've somewhat improved, but then you also saw this. He kind of went backwards again. So I think that it's, I mean, it's going to be something that comes down to the coaching staff and what they think that their needs are. It'll be, it's going to be an interesting offseason. That's well, for sure.
And then if they want to save more money, they might consider getting rid of Zeitler, which I wouldn't do because he's probably been their best lineman, or he's been their most consistent one at least. I wouldn't personally, I mean, I could say they'd save like $12 million or whatever it is. And that's pretty good money. So if you have your eye on somebody and whether you think it's Will Hernandez and Lemieux can handle it, or you want to sign some, like I could see it. I would say keep your most consistent offensive lineman. Like it's not the group's not going to get better if you remove Kevin Zeitler. I would say
I agree. I don't disagree.
It might get better if you remove Fleming or Lemieux or whatever, but it's not going to get better if you.
I mean, you saw it's improved the second that Hernandez's snap counts went down. You saw how much better they played. I almost honestly, which this is a crazy thought, and I don't know how you're probably going to laugh at me, but I would be okay with them moving Nick Gates over and actually getting someone else in there. I think Danny would benefit from having a veteran there. I think. Yeah. You watch the film, his snaps are really all over the place. He is not as consistent as everyone is making it out to be. His snaps are very high. I know in that one, I think it was against the Rams. I mean, Danny's catching air to catch the ball at one point. Like they're very inconsistent. And I think that was part of his demise too, is that they have this Brit. He's never played center before.
Didn't have a training camp, never snapped it in a game in his life. Like that's a lot to ask. He's been better than I expected him to be. He started off slow. But yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting idea. I wouldn't be shocked if there's a veteran center in free agency or something that they really like.
But I doubt it. This is just me dreaming at this point, right?
But I mean, I think they really like him at center, I would say. But I mean, if there's somebody that Joe Judge really likes out there, whether it's the draft or free agency, like the fact that Nick Gates can play other positions is very good. So
awesome. Yeah. And I think that's part of some of these players, like, pair. It seems like they're trying to train him at right tackle and left tackle. I read an interview with Judge, and he said that his IQ is like very high. He's very intelligent, very interested in learning, is an active learner. So I think that's where he brings a lot of value to the team, on top of having those massive arms that are there must be the biggest.
Gooch was talking. He was asked about him today, and he admitted that he struggled the other day, but he was like just raving about him and his potential and how he said how big of a dude he is. And that's kind of like, he has long arms, which is a very appealing thing for the lineman, obviously. And he's athletic.
His arms are 62% of my body. That's how long they are. I did the math myself.
It's crazy to think how large these humans are. And you, when you're like in the locker room with them, you especially like just feel how much bigger they are than you.
Yeah, I bet. I can't even imagine. I mean, I remember even being at U of A. Obviously, I mean, I grew up in Connecticut, a small high school. These were not professional athletes by any means. I remember that my first day on campus, like staring up at everyone. You're a big boy.
That's crazy.
It's not something I was used to at all.
Yeah. Just massive.
Moving forward, though, who this year do you think was your favorite person to interview? It doesn't have to be favorite in a positive sense. It could be just whatever stood out to you the most. Is there a time during the season?
To interview, you said?
Yeah, that you interviewed. Throughout the season, is there one person
I wrote the story pretty recently about Leonard Williams and the offseason, like what he did in the offseason, because, you know, obviously he's been so much in his career. Like, so I got, we don't really get many one-on-one interviews remotely, but I was able to get him. I requested him because I'd like heard a story about how he was doing like deep sea spearfishing, basically where the 300-pound man is going, 10 feet underwater, or whatever it is, and just killing fish with a spear.
That's insane.
I thought that was so awesome and cool. So I asked about that, and then it wound up like it really like helped, like because he hears all that criticism, and he was going underwater is where he like found peace and where he calmed. So like I thought that was really cool. He you could tell he was very happy to talk about something other than football. And, you know, he, for his whole career, he's been getting asked about how he doesn't get enough sacks or whatever. And he said, thanks for talking to me about something other than football. Like, And so those, awesome. Those are like the conversations I miss in the locker room, because that's where you'd be able to have them. But
that, definitely more of like a personal.
Like one interview, that was my favorite one I've done this year for sure.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I didn't know. You'll have to send me that one too. I scuba dive, so I relate to him that when you're underwater.
I've had asthma, so all that underwater stuff.
Yeah, sorry.
I can swim, but I'm not going under for too long.
Leo and I will handle the spearfishing. Stay above water. So the next person I can even think of before we start wrapping it up, and I have to bring him up because I'm very intrigued. So how is interviewing Golden Tate after everything happened? Because it seems like Joe Judge got control over the situation very quick.
I mean, he's talked to us maybe twice since then. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been pretty intensely critical of him all year, pretty much. I just think for what they needed him to be, he just hasn't lived up to it, and he's been immature on top of that in a lot of ways. But, you know, after that, he was contrite. I think Joe Judge got to him pretty clearly. I mean, the whole thing he did was just an embarrassment for a veteran, honestly, like especially on this team, you know, for him to just yell at the sideline. When it originally happened, I saw the like touchdown one where he looked at the camera and said it. And then afterwards, I saw people pointing out that he caught one catch and he looked over to the sideline and did it. I'm just like, all right, man.
I didn't touch on to that.
Really lame. Like he knew what he was well aware of what he was doing. Then his wife chimed in. I'm sure he knew his wife was doing
that. So inappropriate. You know, there's a level of
judgment on their family, but like, I just don't think he's handled himself very well. And kind of reflection on what, I mean, I covered him, the Eagles traded for him at the deadline in 2018. And over those last eight games, he was not good. They didn't know how to use him. And then I saw the Giants handed him $37.5 million. And I thought that was a bad move at the time. I know some people trying to act like it's hindsight 2020, but he wasn't coming off a good year and he was almost 30. So
yeah,
I didn't get the money at the time. And then, in terms of like interviews, I mean, he's fine when he interviews, I would say, but we just haven't talked to him that much this year because number one, he hasn't really been that important to
right.
And number two, there was a stretch where he was either hurt or, you know, he was sent home.
Yeah.
Like, so it's been a weird year for him. That's for sure. He might've played his last game already because he's hurt right now, but I don't know.
Oh, he's hurt. I didn't know that actually.
Yeah, he hurt his calf. That's why he missed last. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He didn't play. That's right. I totally forgot. But it was kind of obvious he wasn't there. So it's hard because they still keep forcing him into the playbook. I don't know if doing that to increase his value or what is going on, but it seems like they're still a little bit hung on him. I don't know what the deal is.
The problem is they don't really have many other options. I would think Dante Pettis showed something interesting last week. He made a couple of catches. I would hope they give him more time, see if he's somebody they can bring back next year.
Me too. I got to see him when I was at University of Arizona. He's first the freshman when I was a senior. But I want to see them use him on special teams. That way he was very, very good in college on special teams. So I wonder if that was part of the thought process when they brought him over, is that because the special teams definitely have been.
Yeah, they need better returners. And he's the best returner in like college history. So
Exactly. So before we wrap up, what's the thing that you're looking forward to the most next season, this upcoming season?
I mean, I'm looking forward to this offseason. Honestly, I think the Giants have a very interesting offseason ahead. I mean, the Daniel Jones thing, they seem to be committed to sticking with him. I don't think that's like just because they say they're going to doesn't mean they legally have to technically. I think they will. But that side of it, and whether if they get him support, and if Dave Gettleman's fired, and who they replace Dave Gettleman with, and if Jason Garrett's fired, who they replace him with, like that, I'm very interested to see just how this Giants offseason plays out, because this division's bad. They're in position where if they get the right pieces in here, they can start being like legit playoff contenders. And if they bungle it and they still can't make the playoffs in this crappy division, then it's going to be a poor reflection on the owner and everybody under him. So.
Absolutely.
It's a very important offseason for the future, I would say. One of the most important.
Huge. It's interesting. It's a very big offseason across the entire league, too. So this is going to be a very interesting offseason. So I agree with you. I mean, the Giants they're known for being very hush about everything. This is how it's been since I've been a Giants fan. They're very quiet about their business. When it comes out, it's just a blast everywhere because they try to keep it quiet. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Even who knows? I mean, they have the capability of, if this game doesn't go well and they don't go to the playoffs, I could see them firing Jason Garrett the next day. You know, it's, you never know. It's all over the place. So it's crazy. It'll be very interesting. We'll have to catch up once we, after the draft, maybe.
Sounds good.
We can, sure, we can see what happens. And knowing
no,
that
no Arizona players get drafted again.
Yeah. I mean, who are they going to draft? I look up a list trying to find people. I mean, it's nice to see Gronk playing, and I feel bad for Foles. I'm a big Foles fan, I think, but it's more fun when he's winning a Super Bowl, not when he's playing horrible.
Yeah, it's been sad.
You know, but I still, it's still bear down. So I try my best to be excited.
Don't bear down.
Why don't you tell everyone again where they can find you?
Yeah, so all my stories are at nj.com/giants, and I'm at Zach Blatt, Z-A-C-K, on Twitter.
Right. And you guys can follow me at Steffi Smalls with 3 L's. I'll be sure you can find Zach on my Twitter. I'm going to post those 2 stories that we talked about today. That'll be very interesting to look at, especially this deep sea, what is it called?
Deep sea spearfishing.
Spearfishing, that's right. Yeah. I'm actually very intrigued to see that. But I'm sure you guys also follow on Meet19 and Sleeper Wire. We will catch you guys later.